Mrs. Wells. That's a cold deceit.
She kept composure.
You are quite right, she said. I should never have deceived you.
Why did you burn it?
I didn't want the news to spoil the party, she said. If you'd discovered he was arriving tonight, he might have gone down to the quay, and he might have spurned you, and you might have become upset.
But that is just what has me confounded, Mrs. Wells.
What?
She said. The party.
It's only a party.
Is it?
Crosby, she said. Don't be foolish. If you go looking for a conspiracy, you will find a conspiracy. It's a party, and that's all.
Gentlemen with marine connections, said Wells. Naval types. What do you care about naval types?
I care that they are men of considerable rank and influence, because I care about my business, and the party will do my business good. Everybody loves a theme. It lends a flavour to an evening.
Does Mr. Alistair Lauderback get an invite, I wonder?
Of course not, said Mrs. Wells. Why should I invite him? I've never set eyes upon the man in my life. And anyway, as I told you, it was precisely because I didn't want you to get upset that I burned this morning's paper.
You're very right. I shouldn't have, and I'm very sorry to have deceived you.
But the party, I assure you, is only a party.
What about the bonanza? Said Wells. And my papers? How do they fit in?
I'm afraid they don't, said Mrs. Wells.
I have half a mind to take a stroll down to Port Chalmers, said Wells, around sundown. Nice night for it. Bit chilly, perhaps.
By all means do so, said Mrs. Wells.
I'd miss the party, of course.
That would be a shame.
Would it?
She sighed.
Crosby, she said, you are being very silly.
He leant closer. Where's my money, Mrs. Wells?
It is in a vault at the reserve.
Liar! Where is it?
It is in a vault at the reserve.
Where is it?
It is in a vault at the reserve.
Liar!
Insulting me, said Mrs. Wells, will not...
He slapped her hard across the face.
You're a dirty liar, he said. A rotten thief, and I'll call you worse before I'm through with you.
A perfect silence followed. Mrs. Wells did not reach up to touch her cheek where he had slapped her. She stayed perfectly still, and Wells, suddenly vexed, turned away from her and crossed the room to where the decanters and bottles were set out upon their silver tray. He poured himself a measure, drank it off, and then poured another. Anna kept her eyes on her rope wreath, which was becoming misshapen under her trembling fingers. She did not dare to look at Mrs. Wells. Just then there came a swift knock at the front door, and then a voice calling through the slot,
"Package for Mrs. Lydia Wells!"
Mrs. Wells made to rise, but Crosby Wells shouted,
"No!"
He had become very flushed.
"You stay right there!"
He pointed to Anna with the hand that held his glass.
"You!"
he said.
"Go and see!"
She did. It was a bottle, pint-sized, wrapped in brown paper, and stamped with the matrix of the chemist on George Street.
"What is it?"
called Wells from the floor above.
"It's a package from the chemist's,"
Anna called back. There was a pause, and then Mrs. Wells said, speaking clearly,
"Oh, I know what it is. It's hair tonic. I placed the order last week."
Anna returned upstairs, the package in her hand.
"Hair tonic," said Wells.
"Really, Crosby," said Mrs. Wells, "you are becoming paranoiac."
To Anna she said, "You can put it in my room, on the nightstand, please." Wells was still glaring at his wife.
"You're not going anywhere," he said, "not until you tell me the truth. You're staying right here, where I can keep an eye on you."
"In that case, I look forward to a very dull afternoon," said Mrs. Wells.
Crosby Wells responded angrily to this, and they continued bickering. Anna, glad to have a reason to exit, took the paper-wrapped bottle across the hallway and into the hushed darkness of Mrs. Wells' bedroom. She went to set the bottle down upon the nightstand when something caught her eye. A bottle of hair tonic, half the size of the bottle she was holding in her hand, and not at all alike in its dimensions. Frowning, she looked at the package in her hand, and then, on a sudden impulse, slid her finger underneath the wrapping and sloughed the paper away. The bottle was unmarked. It had been corked, and the cork had been sealed with candle wax. She held it up to the light. It contained a thick, treacly liquid, the colour of rust.
"Laudanum," she whispered.
"Wu Jing," in which Emery Staines does Carver's bidding, and Ah Suk is effectively deceived. Staines held the gown up to the light, wondering. There were five in total, one of orange silk and the rest of muslin, but apart from them the chest was quite empty. What was the meaning of it? Perhaps they held some sentimental value for Carver, but if so, then why had he outfitted Staines with a pistol in watching over them? Perhaps they were stolen goods, for they did not look at all valuable. Or perhaps, Staines thought, Carver was going mad. This thought cheered him. He chuckled aloud, and then, shaking his head, returned the gowns to the chest. There came a sharp knock upon the door.
"Who is it?"
said Staines. There was no answer, but after a moment the caller knocked again.
"Who's there?"
said Staines again. The caller knocked a third time, more urgently. Staines felt his heartbeat quicken. He went to the bureau and picked up the pistol. Holding it flat against his thigh, he walked to the door, unlatched it, and opened it a crack.
"Yes?" he said.
In the hallway stood a Chinese man of perhaps 30 years, dressed in a tunic and a woolen cape.
"Francis Carver," he said.
Staines remembered Carver's instruction.
"I'm afraid there's nobody of that name here," he said. "You don't mean Mr. Wells, Francis Wells?"
The Chinese man shook his head.
"Carver," he said.
He produced a piece of paper from his breast and held it out. Curious, Staines took it. It was a letter from the Cockatoo Island Penitentiary, thanking Mr. Yongsheng for his inquiry and informing him that upon his release from jail, Mr. Francis Carver had sailed for Dunedin, New Zealand, upon the steamer Sparta. At the bottom of the letter, and in a much darker shade of ink, somebody else had written Hawthorne Hotel. Staines stared at the note for a long time. He had not known that Carver was a former convict. The news was striking to him, but he found, upon further reflection, that it was not wholly unexpected. At last, and with great reluctance, he shook his head.
"I'm sorry,"
he said, passing the piece of paper back to the Chinese man and smiling apologetically.